Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 14th of October 2012. My name's T.R.P. Watson, and this week I'm joined by Phil from the West End Whingers, Nick from Partially Obstructed View, and Paul Chandler. We're now going to talk about Our Boys at the Duchess Theatre. This is a play by Jonathan Lewis. I think it was first staged in the early 90s, and it's the play itself is set in 1984, and talks about Jonathan Lewis's experiences when he was a potential officer candidate in a military hospital. He basically signed up to be in the army, but fell ill with a rather embarrassing-looking ailment. And this really talking about his experiences, people he knew, and people he knew in hospital, and It's a nicely acted piece. I think it's got a rather starry cast. People like Lawrence Fox, Arthur Darvill, although I didn't see him on the night I went, Matthew Lewis, who people would know from the Harry Potter films, and Gillian Coy, who's quite an up-and-comer. Possibly actually the most impressive person was somebody just out of drama school, Lewis Reeves, who plays a man who's been shot in the head and goes from being coming on to the set, barely able to move, drooling, and in the end is almost pretty much recovered. But this is really a story of people in a hospital ward either getting better or realizing that there is something seriously wrong with them. I think that we see that in the character of Joe, played by Lawrence Fox, who is a survivor of the Hyde Park bombing. Where the Blues and members of the Blues and Royals and out on their horses were attacked, and quite a few were killed. So, Nick, what did you think about this play?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it's had pretty rave reviews both from the official reviewers and from regular people for the most part. I thought it was very well acted. I did see the whole cast. I think I saw it the day before you, and Arthur Darvill was there for that performance. I thought they're all very good. The only slight thing about the performances was that it took me quite a long time to figure out what accent Lawrence Fox was attempting. I finally decided he was trying for West Country. It's a bit of counterintuitive casting there to have Lawrence Fox playing one of the kind of one of the boys rather than the officer there, and I'm not sure he entirely pulled it off. And you know, I kind of never quite saw him as being that far away from Officer Mingus, who's Julian Coy's character. But no, I thought it was very well acted, very well directed. I found lots of little things distracted me about it, and it was a lot of medical things that seemed kind of just a little bit off. And it's kind of those little things that shouldn't really be this is the thing that I notice about it, but they ended up kind of distracting from the points it was making, which was actually, I mean, you know, but politically and personally, it's very good. It's making some very valid observations, and they come across very well. But I was kind of I suppose also I've actually been in hospital for a pilonidal sinus, which is what the potential officer character is in there for. Although it's not the most dignified of things to go into hospital for, it's not quite as extreme as I can understand. Obviously, that they're going to bump up the comedy of it, but I was kind of looking at him, kind of walking funny when he's just had the operation, and then walking perfectly all right when he's had a relapse, and thinking that's the other way around. If you'd had a relapse, you would not be walking in there quite happily, and nor would you be quite as in much pain after the operation. But I mean, they're kind of little things, but I just found myself very, very distracted by them. There's also, I mean, you've kind of given away what happens to Lawrence Fox's character, and given what we eventually find out about him, I mean, I don't know whether they just forgot to put his makeup on the night I went to see it, because I can't really believe that they wouldn't have thought this was a thing that needed doing. But early on, he kind of strips to his pants a couple of times, and it's very obvious that you know, I mean, medicine now, kind of plastic surgery, isn't going to get you looking quite like that after you've been blown up. Certainly wouldn't have done in the 80s. You kind of look at him and go, why isn't he covered in scars? You know, it's all right saying he's had a miraculous recovery, but that's what you're looking at there is an actual miraculous recovery, not not medicine. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, for some reason there was just something about it, and little details just kept jumping out at me that made me not able to quite lose myself in it. But that's not to say, you know, that I'm not recommending it in any way, saying don't go see it. It's very nicely acted. It's a great ensemble. You really kind of they're all very well cast in the parts, apart from I've got a slight question mark over Lawrence Fox in class wise, really, in terms of, you know, his background. I don't think he ever really, you know, perhaps some people get typecast for a reason, but, you know, performance wise you know, I don't have anything against, you know, I thought his you know, he explored the character in an interesting way, and, you know, we got the emotion out of the character. But yeah, it's a strange one. It's one of those where I have little niggling issues that stopped me entirely getting the desired effect.
Yeah, I'm sorry to have slightly given away the Lawrence Fox bit. Okay, Phil, what did you think about this play?
Well, I wasn't distracted. I thought, like Nick, it was tremendously well acted. I think the thing that I enjoyed about it particularly was it's so funny. I mean, it really is. It really made me laugh a lot. If I had a small criticism, and it's a very tiny criticism, I felt that one of the recoveries, was a little bit pat and a little bit sort of, it was a very big, seemed like a full recovery at the end. But because the whole thing was so entertaining, I could forgive it almost anything. I thought the scene, the sort of the deer hunter scene towards the end of the first act was brilliantly done, very, very funny. And you got the feeling of this sort of camaraderie of a, you know, a group of people who are stuck together in hospital. They're bored, you know, and they're sort of playing tricks on each other and all that kind of thing. I thought that came across really well. Really nothing that I could really find to criticise about, apart from the slight patness of one of the recoveries.
But Paul, what did you think about this?
I mean, I had a perfectly nice Saturday afternoon in the theatre. I probably wasn't quite as keen on it as the other two guys. You know, to me, it's like a nice production, good acting, strange casting for Lawrence Fox possibly, but yeah, that's fine. But yeah, it's just... It's a bit of a slight piece for me, really, and I'm not sure it quite deserves such a fancy West End revival, maybe after 20-odd years. But yeah, the deer hunter scene is excellent. It's probably worth going just for that, almost, I'd have thought. And no, I mean, go along, and it's a perfectly satisfactory entertainment in the theatre, I'd say.
I didn't, you know, you say it's starry. It wasn't starry to me when I went, because I had no idea, apart from Lawrence Fox, who any of them were. I hadn't seen Arthur Darvill in Doctor Who, although everybody was saying to me, have you seen the play with Arthur Darvill in? And so I do know who he is now, and I had seen him on stage before, funnily enough, with Matt Smith in Swimming with Sharks.
Yeah.
So keep my eye on him, because I thought he was rather good.
We're now going to talk about Damned by Despair, which is on at the Olivier Theatre at the National. And it's a play by the monk, Tiaso de Molina, and who was one of the sort of great Spanish playwrights of the Spanish Golden Age, which more or less coincides with when Shakespeare was writing, a little bit later, most of them, although it's that sort of that 100 years where they were doing things like launching the Armada and getting vast wealth from the New World. This version is by Frank McGuinness, and it's directed by Bijan Shebani. It's a rather odd play. We have a character called Paolo, who has been acting as a hermit, sort of a religious hermit, in the wilds for about 10 years with his unfortunate servant Prodisco, who's always complaining about not having enough to eat. And they are visited by the devil, and the devil tells Paolo if he goes into Naples, he will meet somebody called Enrico, who will share the same fate as he does. So Paolo decides to go into Naples and meets Enrico, and Enrico is a nasty piece of work. He is a criminal, a murderer, and all sorts of other nasties he's probably getting up to, although we're not entirely sure. But Enrico is played rather well by Bertie Carvel, and the other people I'd want to pull out are Amanda Lawrence playing the devil, who was particularly good, and of course Rory Keenan as Prodisco, the sort of the put upon servant. But most of the rest of these characters in this are rather flat and sort of two dimensional. They just sort of they're on for a scene and they don't make any impact. And it's I really didn't think this was particularly good play, to be perfectly honest. And I was actually rather offended by something that happened at the end. I'm not somebody who believes in heaven and hell, and the entrance, let's say, just say the entrance requirements for heaven, I found rather offensive towards the end of this play. I'm not really sure how to describe it without giving too much away, but essentially it is about, you know, it's a play about religious doubt and what you do when you feel that you've been deserted, and the idea of whether or not there is any chance of redemption in life. But I know a lot of people have been really upset by this production, and some people were somebody took every opportunity he could online to say how badly cast Paolo was. He's played by Sebastian Armesto. I didn't really think he was bad when I saw him, but perhaps I was not looking properly. But it's we've got quite a few walkouts. It also changed an awful lot, so we've probably each of us seen a different play. So Phil, the version of the play you saw, how was it?
Well, I probably saw it closest to how it was on press night, because I saw the Monday preview. And I'll start with the good things about production, which will be very brief. One, I thought Amanda Lawrence as the devil was suitably creepy, and she, you know, I like her as an actress. I thought she actually gave it something which I sort of could sort of believe in, as much as I could believe in any of it. The other good thing about it was the fact it was advertised as 2 hours 35 minutes, and actually it was 2 hours 10, including the intervals. So it was relatively short. I think when you saw it, everybody else saw it, it had been slashed. And I think there was that's a considerable amount to chop out. And I think it was a sign of panic. Quite a lot of people left at the interval. I can completely understand why. I thought it was absolutely awful. I didn't buy the, I'm not religious. So I, like you, Tim, I didn't buy the central conceit. It sort of started off as though you were in 17th century, 16th century, whichever it was, and then it sort of comes to contemporary Naples, and that really jarred. There were so many things I could go on all day that most of the present day in the first act was set in this pizzeria where Bertie Carvel is Enrico is sort of being very, very evil, cutting people's ears off for no particular reason, and establishing himself as this very bad man. I wasn't convinced by him at all. I thought he was miscast. Without going on about that, I was very disappointed in his performance. There's a scene which sort of I don't know what it parodies, but it does the Reservoir Dogs scene, and he hums "Stuck in the Middle with You." Stuck in the Middle again. It's just I don't know. I just almost watched through my fingers at times. It really, to me, was that bad. I think they've just. I can understand why they've updated it to maybe make it feel a bit more contemporary, but that none of it worked for me. There were so many things that jarred in it.
Paul, how did you feel about this?
I don't really know where to begin, to be honest. I've just become fascinated and a little bit obsessed with the entire debate and reaction to it. You know, I think I went to the third performance. It was 2 hours 10. In the second half, a friend of ours who was in the front row had 7 seats to herself, which isn't something you see every day at the National. You know, and normally you go to something at the National and it's not very good, but you say, oh, the acting was good and the scenery was good and, you know, everything else was good. But in this, you know, the set is nasty and tacky. I didn't even think the lighting was very good the night I saw it. You know, is the chap's name Sebastian Armesto?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think he was particularly good the night I saw it. You could debate about the Bertie Carvel miscasting, if you like. It was just horrible, but I think more interesting than that is, I mean, Tim, you talked about the entry requirements to get into hell, but that's, call it what it was, a an animatronic moving skeleton in flames, which, Phil, was it in there the night you saw it?
No, I'm very disappointed. In fact, that would have, you know, upped the ante a bit for me. When I heard about that, because other people have mentioned it, who saw earlier previews, and I feel cheated, actually. I sat through the whole thing. I actually came back after the interval because it's just, it was sort of a curious fascination to see the whole thing through, and I didn't get that at the end.
Join me, if you like, in putting in a freedom of information request to the National Theatre about how much money was spent on that skeleton for them to then cut it. As my friend said to me yesterday when we were going over it again, our laughter may possibly have got that skeleton cut, we think. it was the most embarrassing, cringeworthy thing that I've seen on a National Theatre stage, certainly. And then, Tim, I think when you saw it, was there some sort of puppet body being beaten up after a drowning scene?
I don't remember that, no, not particularly.
I mean, people have spoken about that, but I don't think that was in there the night I saw it. I mean, according to Michael Billington, this play is a masterpiece, which it might well be, but all I can go on is the Frank McGuinness translation. And yeah, again, I mean, it was not good at all. When I don't know who the actor was who was playing the father, but people have told me they've seen him in other things and he's been quite good. But whenever he comes onto the stage in this, he just sucks all the life out of the play. I mean, that was the point where I must admit I nodded off in the first half when there was an interminable scene with the father and the Bertie Carvel's character. It was, yeah. But the interesting thing for me is I've never seen such strong reactions about any play. The whole time I've been going to the theatre regularly, these last 3 years or so, if you go onto the Time Out thread, there's loads of people commenting with a ridiculous number of one-star reviews. If you go onto the What's On Stage forum, there's huge debate about it there. I just think it's a fantastic car crash, really, to watch. I've thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing, to be honest.
In fact, it's almost making me want to go and see it again, actually. And also, I read in one of the reviews, and I missed it completely, one of the characters apparently was dental flossing. Did anybody else spot that?
No, I can't say I did.
Okay, I'm very sorry that I missed that. I almost want to go back to see if that's still in there. But maybe they imagined it, or maybe they were having some sort of fantasy. I don't know.
I do think I'm going to go along to Wednesday to the director's platform. I seriously think I'm going to go along with that. That's worth £3 or £4 of my pounds any day, I think. Go on, Nick. What did you think of this?
Well, I saw it the most recent of any of you, so it had lost another 5 minutes. I saw it, I think it was the night after press night. I saw it Thursday, so I think that would have been the night after press night, and it was down to 2 hours 5 minutes. And I mean, I try not to go into things with preconceptions, but obviously with this, as everybody said before, it's kind of impossible because the reaction has been huge. And it has been insane. So I suppose in a way that was kind of, that kind of helped, because I kind of went in there, and there was two people there with me who we chatted about it at the interval and afterwards. And I think none of us quite saw, we all watched a car crash, but I don't think any of us quite saw the car crash that was causing people to tell Nicholas Heitner to resign and, you know, to take this off the stage immediately, and the worst thing that anybody's ever seen. You know, I went in with people mentioning Fram and Danton's death, and I certainly didn't hate it quite as much as either of those. What I did feel, and what I'm hearing about the things that have been cut, I did sit there thinking that, you know, it was that what was saving this rather dull, kind of misjudged production was these occasional moments where it was just a bit insane, like, you know, messages from God coming through a flashing pizzeria sign. And it sounds to me like most of the kind of cracktastic stuff had actually been taken out. And I suspect that I actually might have made me enjoy it more if there was more moments of kind of complete lunacy rather than just slight misjudgment. But we seem to have a real mixed reaction to Bertie Carvel's performance. I've always liked him in the past. I thought this was just horrifically misjudged from him. I can see absolutely what he was trying to do. I think he was trying to go for this kind of very soft-spoken kind of menace, but it was all soft-spoken and no menace. And actually, I was kind of sitting there thinking, what is the voice making me think of? And it was kind of just at the start of the second act, I just went, Frank Spencer. And it is, it's kind of, he's going, you know, Frank Spencer is a terrifying gangster. It's just, that's not going to work. You know, there's nothing about him that seemed right about the part. With Sebastian Armesto, I agree. Agree that I wasn't convinced by him as the monk. I actually thought once he kind of despaired and turned into a villain, he was much stronger. And I suppose maybe the other way around would have been an interesting way to cast him, because he was much more. I believed his kind of his anger and his menace a lot more than I did for a second from Bertie Carvel. Yeah, I mean ultimately I think my big problem with it is that for all the kind of bizarre staging and the weird set and the modernizing for no reason and kind of modernizing entirely cosmetically, which really didn't work, you started with what did feel like it was in period, and then you got it turning up in modern Naples. What really didn't work for me was that it obviously the piece is a very Catholic morality play. It kind of its whole point is this very, as you say, the requirements for how to live your life, and one of the things that I find most distasteful about kind of Catholic dogma is this idea that you can be terrible all your life and then recant on your deathbed and then go off and be filleted by cherubs in heaven. At the meantime, you can be like the best person on earth, but for a split second you doubt the inevitable, the ineffable plan of God, and that's it. You know, you're on gas mark 6 for all eternity. I don't actually think that means the play shouldn't be put on again, though. I mean, I because one of my friends said afterwards, I don't understand for a second why this was programmed. And actually, I can understand why it was programmed, because I would be interested to see someone look at it from a modern day point of view and kind of look at that particular kind of 17th century attitude and go, that is really messed up, that is really, you know. But for all the, like I say, entirely cosmetic modernization, the attitude of the piece was, yes, this is it, this is how it is, you know. Yeah, do whatever you like and then recant on your deathbed, and that you're doing what God wants, you know. So I find that very distasteful, and I found that the production didn't question it in any way. So, yeah, I think I probably, you know, hated it the least out of all of you, but that might just be that I went in there expecting, you know, like I say, Danton's death or Fram, and it wasn't quite. I did find great stretches of it dull, I must say, but it did then kind of jump into something completely bonkers happening, and that had kind of salvaged it a little bit. But I think probably the best bonkers stuff was taken out, unfortunately.
But Nick, I'll tell you what, if this was a Red Not Dead at the Globe, and you went along and they did it, and I don't know, Al Bennett played a part or something, you'd go, yeah, that was all right. But this is the Olivier at Britain's National Theatre. You know, it's like, what is it, 1,300 and something seats? It's, you know, ticket sales are in the toilet. You know, it's probably the least starry cast to be in the Olivier that I can remember. You know, it's just... Oh yeah, Lord.
Certainly in the way it's in the way it's ended up is bizarre. And I mean, obviously, yes, it's not just something that's happened in, you know, it's something very early on in the decision of where to stage it and who to cast in it. So it's, you know, there was mistakes obviously being made or strange decisions being made very early on in the process, which have all kind of culminated in this. I mean, I suspect that since Bertie Carvel's the closest thing they've got to a star name in it because of the Olivier Award this year, that that's why he's ended up in kind of the larger part that doesn't really suit him. So it all just seems very, yeah, misjudged. But no, I don't, like I say, I don't question the fact of maybe the National wanting to re-examine it, I just don't think it's been re-examined. And yes, I'm not sure that the Olivier was the right place for it to start with, maybe the Cottesloe. But the play itself at the National, I don't, you know, I could see why you might think that might be worth exploring.
We're now going to talk about a rather interesting piece of theatre. They've put a stage, a performance area in Shoreditch Town Hall. And it's a circular. It's circular. It's very reminiscent of the design they used upstairs at the Royal Court when they did Mike Bartlett's Cock. I think it is influenced by it, and I'm pretty sure it's the same, pretty much the same designer. So we have we are in the round in this sort of wooden, this wooden O, if you like, is this wooden performance area, and Paint for Plough, who are putting this on, who are putting on three. They're sort of three one-act plays. I mean, they're fairly short plays. I mean, they run to between an hour and a half, and it's a really quite a remarkably good season. I thought they use just four actors in all four plays. There's one play, The Sound of Heavy Rain, which all four actors appear in, and then they sort of pair off one man, one woman to do the other plays. Now, we're going to start off by talking about probably the strongest of these plays. I think most people have said it's the strongest of these plays, which is Lungs. This is a play performed really without any... If you look at the play text, I mean, you almost get no idea of who's speaking when, almost, and what they're speaking about. It is simply just one line after another, and they more or less have to make it up as they go along. But it's about a relationship between a couple, them getting together, and them breaking apart, finding each other again. And it's really, really remarkably done. It's because it's sort of almost done at a breakneck pace. It feels like a breakneck pace because they just. It's just one line next, one line next, scenes change, and they're still speaking, but you can feel the way the scene has changed, but all they've done is just take a deep breath, and you know, suddenly it's a new scene, and you're not given any cues to that, but you can still feel it. And it's a very cleverly written piece, I think. It's by Duncan McMillan. Nick, what did you think about Lungs?
I think I'm probably the one person who didn't think it was the one best one of the season, but it's certainly, I mean, all three are just excellent in different ways. And yes, I don't have much to disagree with there. I think it's very well performed by Alistair Cope and Kate O'Flynn, I think, are the two in that one. I'm just looking at my notes on Sound Heavy Rain because that's got everybody's name in it. But yes, I think those are the two in that one. And yes, I mean, it's got some similarities to One Day with When We Were Young, which are actually they're fairly surface similarities, which is, I think, the next one we're going to talk about. But yes, it's beautifully acted. I mean, I think like a lot of people, I had a problem sympathising at all with the character of the woman. She's not kind of the easiest person to like, and much of their relationship seems to be her speaking over anything that the man says, and him desperately trying not to give offence with whatever one or two words in edgeways he manages to get in. Within that framework, I think it's particularly impressive how well the actors deal with it. And yes, that one's that's the one directed by Richard Wilson, and I think it's very very interestingly directed. Actually, I did find something that I didn't have time to look at, but I think it's been produced in America in a completely different production, and the review I found of that seemed to suggest a wildly different interpretation that was very kind of Pinteresque with big pauses. So as you say, it's very much down to the director and actors how they interpret the piece, and I think that this director and actors have done a very good job of it and picked a really good way of doing it.
Yeah, we forget how good Richard Wilson is as a director of new plays. He's a, you know, big enthusiast for this sort of thing. Paul, what did you think about this play?
Well, more importantly, thanks to Richard Wilson for providing the cushions. I understand he paid for the cushions at the venue. And without them, we'd have all been in some big trouble, I can tell you. But with regards to the play, I just thought this was fantastic. I went in with zero expectations. I've seen plays by the other two playwrights in the roundabout season, but I wasn't familiar with Duncan Macmillan's work. I hadn't seen either of the two actors before. Kate O'Flynn is just fantastic in her role. And then Alistair Cope in the less showy role is also absolutely excellent. And again, the direction with where you're just, it trusts its audience so much, you know, it just, it keeps on going and going, and there's lapses in time and there's no pauses, and the pace is just kept up the whole time, and you are able to keep up with it and make those switches as time goes on. It's like an act of endurance for the actors, you know. It's about, is it 90 minutes long?
It says 80 in the...
Yeah, 80 odd minutes long, and I don't know how they do it, honestly, because there's so much dialogue to get through, and there's nothing on stage. It's just the two of them on stage the whole time. I mean, this is essentially the reason I go to the theatre, really, to see things like this. It's a must buy from me, I would say.
Okay, we'll move on to the next play, and that's One Day When We Were Young, which is a play that starts in the middle of the Second World War. Young man just about to go off to war. His girlfriend, we kind of discover, is some kind of she's the daughter of a man who owns a sweet shop, but she works as one of the intercept stations, where they listen to German transmissions, and this is all part of the sort of the work they did at Bletchley Park. And so you have this sort of, they're actually quite a mismatched couple, because he's pretty much working class, but there is a sort of a slight aspirational difference between them. And I think that we then see them almost 20 years later, meeting in the 1960s. They've both changed. They thought they were going to be married and happily married, but something happened. He was taken as a prisoner of war. They thought he was dead. And they weren't entirely sure what had happened to him, and she fell in love and got married. So there's a lot of bitterness there. And then in the final scene, we get we're almost up to date, and they're both old people, and we get a secret which can fairly obviously be guessed at. But you see this sort of relationship over the years, and it starts off quite fun. It gets fairly tragic in the middle, and then there's some hope for a sort of a reconciliation between these two characters. Again, very well acted. Maya Alexander and Andrew Sheridan are the people in this. They change clothes on stage. They dress. What I found it quite remarkable, and how well they changed ages over the time, and they went from old. I mean, obviously, when you've got sort of very young actors, and I think they're only in their early 20s, these actors, they always look fairly ridiculous when they're playing old people, but I thought they did it really quite well. Paul, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, I mean, we saw this before we saw Lungs, and we came out of that saying, you know, that was pretty cracking, really. I'd echo most of what you said, Tim. Lovely performances, the way that they get changed in front of you on stage while music plays from the time is really well done. And yeah, it's just both of the plays that I've seen from this roundabout season. It wasn't sold out when we saw it, which I think is a real shame. I'm not sure if that was because it was the 4 o'clock on Sunday time slot. But this is the exact sort of thing that people should be going to see, really. High quality new writing in a lovely little venue.
Nick, how did you feel about this one?
Well, coming straight off what Paul said, no, I mean, I went to see all three in evening performances, and none of them were sold out. They were kind of decently attended. It wasn't kind of embarrassing, but they deserve to be sold out, and they're not really. There's quite a few empty cushions around, I mean, just going back to that, as I found out, you might want to check before going to this whether you're going to this with someone who turns out to have a crippling phobia of buttons, which is the way that you get allocated your seat. Which it turns out I do have a friend who has a crippling phobia of buttons, so that was unusual. But yes, this is why I said that for me, Lungs wasn't quite the best one, because from almost everybody has picked that as their favourite of the three. I would say this ever so slightly pipped it one day when we were young. I'm not sure why. I mean, it's a more traditional piece than, but again, that's kind of partly down to the execution of Lungs, not necessarily how it's written. It comes across a lot more traditional, and I think with Nick Payne, he does kind of jump between slightly more experimental things and slightly more traditional things, and this is certainly in the latter court. But I agree with you that about the aging is just spectacularly done. It's just so simply done, and so, you know, it really kind of, despite the fact that I'm looking at people kind of, you know, probably about 10-15 years younger than me, kind of, you know, thinking of my grandparents when I'm seeing them in the final scene, it's just very the subtle little movements and the subtle little changes as time goes on is beautifully executed. And that might be what had the edge for me, is just the performances are lovely in it. I mean, but, you know, all four of the actors in the whole season just give everything in all the plays they turn up in. So it's I just think this had kind of the edge for me.
Yeah, I went to an all-day event, and I have to say the thing about this is it was rather disappointingly attended, especially on the first play I saw in the all-day event, and it's rather a pity, because I think it definitely deserves a wider audience. I think that I think it has quite a lot to do with the redesign of the National Theatre's website, which makes it impossible for you to work out what the hell's going on, and I completely missed this and booked it right at the last moment and got their nice discounted tickets and really had a good time seeing all three plays.
By the way, it's probably worth saying that they've now changed it, so it's £45 if you just book all three plays and see them on any given day, rather than being £45 and see them all in one day.
Is really how it should have been all along.
Yeah.
We move on to The Sound of Heavy Rain. This is the only time we see all four actors together in this season. And it's by Penelope Skinner, who had a big hit with The Village Bike a year or so ago, and this is a rather sort of a film noir detective story, but set in contemporary London, and is really quite interesting, I thought, and rather amusing. I think it is the weakest of the three, as some people have said, but we have a detective struggling with his marriage, who is asked by somebody to find a rather special person, a woman who is a cabaret singer, I don't really want to give it away, but essentially he gets it slightly wrong about who exactly the cabaret singer is, and you kind of work out, but he thinks he's on the trail of a murder, but it doesn't quite work out like that. But I thought it was a nice piece. I think they've had to cut it once or twice on the all-day event, because they've had some problems with the skylights at the venue, and it means that they can't do their rather special lighting, which you need. You need to be able to have full blackout, and because it's in that sort of film noir style, the lighting has to be rather precise, and they've not been able to get it done, which is a pity for some people. So what did you think about this, Nick?
Yes, I think I saw this one last. I went to see them on separate nights, and this was the last one I saw. And I kind of, everybody had been saying was the weakest of the three, which it perhaps is, but only by a tiny little amount. I think, you know, I think I would generally recommend people go see all of them if they're interested in the season. And I think that's a good order to see this one in last, because you've seen the casts in two other plays, and then you see them all come together in this one. So it's nice to kind of see them all work together at the end. It's probably apart from being a four-hander rather than a two-hander, and actually there's some of the characters are playing more, some of the actors play more than one character. So it's a kind of wider story in that sense. So in that way, it's the most kind of distinct from the other two. It's very entertaining, and I absolutely sympathise with you having a lot of trouble describing it, because you're kind of stuck there trying not to use just the wrong word that'll give away one of the twists. It's not the most kind of ingenious twists in the world, but I think it's nicely done to kind of make you think that a particular plot twist is coming along, when in fact it's a slightly different one than you were expecting. So it's really tricky to talk about the plot at all. Again, a really good central performance. It's Andrew Sheridan again, who's got the central role of the detective, and as a result, he's kind of narrating the story very much in the style of film noir, and it's a lovely little pastiche of it, really. There's a lot of humour to it, but actually, you know, it's got a serious side to it, which I quite liked. I think there's, you know, it's there if you want to see it, kind of more depth to it, which I quite like. You know, it's on the surface a very entertaining show, a lot of fun. There's a bit of a weird tonal shift at the end that I'm not sure entirely worked, but apart from that, no, I think it's well worth seeing all three plays in this season, especially now, as you say, that you can see them all on separate nights and still get the discount.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as-yet-unnamed London Theatre podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are ayu-londontheatre.org, and the podcast can also be found on iTunes, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.